by Yahweh's Design, a True Streetline Israelite ministry with Pastor Dan. Now here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome everybody to By Yahweh's Design. I am Pastor Dan, your host for this 1 hour live radio program coming to you over the Heritage Broadcasting System. We welcome all of our kinsmen around the globe who are listening tonight via computers on the internet, over C-band satellites, FM radio thanks to rebroadcasters, shortwave, and 4D TV channel 954. May Yahweh, our Heavenly Father, bless each and every one of you. First and foremost, we do dedicate this program to our Heavenly Father, Yahweh, who is the father of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who was later surnamed Israel. For all good things come from him, and we wish to give him all the praise, glory, and honor for allowing us this opportunity to bring his truth to his holy remnant, the lost sheep of the house of Jacob Israel, also known as the Caucasian or Covenant peoples of the earth. Hallelujah, praise Yahweh in Paleo-Hebrew. We are a two-seed line racial covenant identity ministry, and we've been studying this truth for a good number of years now. However, at no time do we claim to be perfect, and therefore do encourage your participation. Please have your pens and pencils handy as we give out addresses and phone numbers and for other vital information during the hour. There is a severe famine in this land today, and that famine is for the truth. And we salute Heritage and all the good folks that are trying to bring truth to the people today in spite of all the efforts of the establishment and controlled media. Tonight, we're going to present part two of the Communist Third International, and our guest that will be here shortly is United States Air Force General Ben Parton, retired, and he again will present part two of that talk that we did started last week. And also we will open up the phone lines for comments or questions from the listening audience. So please have your pens and pencils handy. I'm going to give you the call-in number, and the general spoke to me by phone and said that he is very much interested in hearing from you, and so please do not hesitate to call in when we open the phone lines. The number will be area code 812-476-3026, and again it's 812-476-3026. If you wish to contact us by snail mail, you can write to By Yahweh's Design in care of Post Office Box 436, Stevensville, Michigan 49127. You can also go to our website, which is altogether by YahwehDesign.com. And Yahweh is YAHWEHS, by Yahweh's Design. We also salute Heritage, as we said, for their grand work. We hope they had a great day off yesterday. They certainly deserve it. And you can contact Heritage if you wish to help them financially by writing to Post Office Box 5583. And again, that's Box 5583. Evansville, Indiana, 47716. Or you can visit their website on the web at hbroadcast.com. Health concerns? Who doesn't have health concerns today? We highly recommend initial consultation with Dr. Judy Nips of Salt Box Herbs in Pennsylvania. And you can contact Judy at area code 724-639-9607. And again, that number is 724-639-9607. For a copy of tonight's program or any previous program, please contact Mr. Steve Melching, and you can reach Steve at area code 219-356-2611, and again that's 219-356-2611, or you can write to him in care of Post Office Box 5151, Huntington, Indiana, and again that's Huntington, Indiana, 46750. Would you like to read a good book? Would you like to know the truth? Beyond Religion is for you. Beyond Religion is a comprehensive, exhaustive research manual by Ben Van Dyke that exposes the errors of organized religion. Beyond Religion is five books in one. Studies include Who is the Serpent, The Seduction of Eve, The Flood, The Almighty's Name, the location of Eden, origin of Scripture, the identity of Israel, and much more.
Mr. Partner's with us?
1,000 pages, loose leaf bound with acid-free reinforced paper, an investment to last a lifetime. To order, send a postal money order for $150 to The Living Way, in care of 33 Benton Avenue, and Benton is B-E-N-T-O-N, 33 Benton Avenue, Winslow, W-I-N-S-L-O-W, Winslow, Maine, parentheses, 04901. And again, that's $150 by postal money order for Beyond Religion by Mr. Van Dyke. Now, tonight is the 29th of May, year 2001, Tuesday evening, and again, we've entitled this The Third International, Part 2, and our guest will be Mr., I should say, General Ben Parton, United States Air Force retired. And before I ask the General on here, I want to thank Alan S. out there in Wisconsin and Stephen R., in New Jersey for your support today. And I'd also like to remind everybody, if you would like to help us, we would appreciate it, since we've only received enough for about 1 week in June airtime. And since I am currently unemployed, we need external help more than ever. One quick verse, and then I'm going to ask the General to come on, out of Psalms 11, verse 3. Just a short one, but it means an awful lot. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Think about that, folks. If the foundations are destroyed, and the foundations in this country are being eaten away day in and day out. We have people in this country that spend every waking moment doing what they can to completely erode the foundations of this nation. Okay, again, tonight is the Third International Part 2, and is Ben on the line?
I'm on the line.
Oh, okay. General Parton. All right. Again, folks, this is United States Air Force General Ben Parton, retired, I believe currently in the Virginia area. And we're going to pick up where we left off, I guess, General, where you were telling us about the three-stepped program where they take over in a country, the communists, I should say, and you had the preparatory period, the period of escalating violence, and the period of exploitation.
And I think when we finished up the last time I was on the air with your program, we had just gone through those three different phases for a war of national liberation.
Right.
War of national liberation was a strategy the communist world uses to transform all colonial and semi-colonial countries into the communist world orbit. And they had hoped to have move enough of these countries into this new organizational structure to be able to have what they called a world commonwealth of socialist states by the year 2000. And the former Soviet Union today calls themselves the Commonwealth of Independent States, the CIS. And they are now in the process of trying to transform into that CIS all of the countries and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And that'll pretty much give them in the CIS all the way from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Now, the European Union is being set up as a Soviet. It is a collective. It's not set up on participation of independent nations as the United Nations. It is set up with a decision-making collective to make decisions for the European Union as a collective. I think perhaps the person who is documenting this most extensively and most thoroughly is Christopher Story, who is editor and publisher of Soviet Analyst, which is, in my opinion, still one of the best intelligence publications in the world. Now, when they were able to move enough countries into the period of exploitation, and able to set up this new world commonwealth of independent states, they were going to arrive at bringing all these countries into this accretion in a sequence that would minimize their minimize the possibility of counter-revolution. Because When the communists take over in a country, they're so bloody in what they do. If there's any opportunity for reciprocity, then it's always very bloody. And I frequently use the example of Indonesia back in the 60s when the communists pulled a coup. They eliminated about tens of thousands of people between midnight and dawn. And the Chinese were very much involved in that. They provided much of the training cadre. Back then you had the Sino-Soviet split, right? But Europe was providing the hardware for most of the activity. And Indonesia was the fourth largest country in the world. So when they made that attempt, one general went home. When they went to kill he and his family, he had a walkie-talkie and fled, got an armored brigade in Jakarta and turned the revolution around. And even though they killed tens of thousands of people that night and wiped out the leadership and the business industry, agriculture, much of the military, government, they were still able to turn the revolution around. Now, over the next decade, the generally published figures were around 300,000 people were either prosecuted or executed who were participating in that real vicious bloodletting between midnight and dawn. And I was speaking with a gentleman who had spent many, many of those years in Indonesia, and he said the figures was not 300,000, it was probably closer to 1 million people who were killed, prosecuted, and executed, and some were just outright executed as a direct consequence of that monstrous attempt to subject that country to communism. But now they're playing out another game over there, now in Indonesia, and so that country is, unless something drastic is done, is going to be sliding down the slippery slope into another revolution. Well, the revolution really has never stopped in Indonesia, just as all of the revolutions in the colonial and semi-colonial world have never stopped. They've just gone from one phase to another. Now, when they consolidate this power in all of these colonial and semi-colonial countries, and as I remind you, everything in the Western Hemisphere was considered colonial, or except the semi-colonial, except the United States. And the United States was considered a colonial country because of the so-called oppressed nations within. And it's rather interesting to look at the paper, and I know the Washington Post, which is typical of the leftist papers in this country. There's hardly a day goes by that they are not exacerbating the conflict thesis in some way, the racial conflict thesis in this country. Every day almost there's either one or two articles in the Washington Post exacerbating some basic theme. And if you're not conscious about the revolutionary struggle and how their game, what their game plan is, then I'm sure a lot of it just goes right over here as being very, very innocent. But the accretion they were bringing in these countries in a sequence that would minimize the potential for counter-revolution. You may wonder why on earth they transitioned Cuba into communism way back there, sitting 9 miles off the coast of the United States, and you would think that the United States would have reacted to turn that revolution around right in your own backyard. But no, we even participated in what they call, the communist world calls, the dissipation of the counter-revolution. And that was the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs was the dissipation of the counter-revolution. In other words, you got all the remnant revolutionary forces that were available, and you sacrificed them in the Bay of Pigs. And it's not the first time it's ever been done. It's all the standard procedure. Once the communists perform a coup or take over in the country, they moved to dissipate the counter-revolution. Get rid of all revolutionary guys, people, and all potential revolutionary people. Now, how are they going to consolidate and bring these countries into this new world order in a way to minimize counter-revolution that would stem from a country transitioning to socialism and still being held vulnerable? The basic plan was originally before the 28 program, way back even before the first international, the same continuum had originally planned to have this first power base set up in France. and the war of when Napoleon got kicked out of Russia, they decided they had to have some defense in depth. And from then on, the power base was to have been established in Russia first and then expand to the rest of the world. First, taking East Europe first, then China, Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Africa north of the Sahara, and then they would be in a position to pull what they call simultaneous multiple wars of national liberation. In other words, move a number of countries simultaneously from the preparatory phase to the period of escalating violence, and give the United States a headache, and as they said, we would be charging around like a bull in a china closet. So many of these efforts underway that we would not be able to contain them. And now, as you know, we have people in over 100 countries, and you have revolutionary struggles going on in every country out there that has not already been transitioned. And we have a situation in the Western Hemisphere now where many countries in the Middle Americas and in South America are ready to be moved into the period of escalating violence. Colombia is already well into the period of escalating violence. You might say Colombia has already moved into the period of exploitation to a certain extent, because many, many thousands of square miles of Colombia has been turned over to the communist-led guerrillas down there. And they're really raising much of their money to support revolutionary causes in South America through the drug moving through Colombia. And Venezuela, you have a leftist socialist government there already, and many of the other countries in the Middle Americas and South Americas are on the brink of moving from the preparatory phase to the period of escalating violence. I know it's rather interesting that in Colombia, there was a publication of a picture of a Soviet submarine kit, Soviet submarine kit, and it's being assembled down in Colombia in the backlands where you would never expect such a thing to be put together. But here you have a Soviet manufactured Russian, it's a Russian manufactured submarine that put out in a kit form and hauled over to Colombia in a kit form. And you can haul many, many, many tons of cocaine in that submarine. When you do that, you see you're not vulnerable to the kind of operation that ship was picked up down and off the coast of South America very recently in the last couple of weeks, and it had 14 tons of cocaine on it. That's 14 tons is 28,000 pounds of cocaine. And the crew was who? Russians and Georgians. I said Georgia from the United States, but Georgia was a former Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And before I go any further, talking about this former Soviet Union, if you look at the publications in Moscow, they still use the Soviet Union. But in the Western world, they use the former Soviet Union in quotes. And but in the public, many of the publications in Moscow, they still call it the Soviet Union. And all of the leaders of every one of those former Soviet Union countries are all ex-communists, so to speak. Quote, ex-communists.
Mm-hmm.
So they are moving, and they are now getting close to being ready to move many countries simultaneously from the preparatory phase to the period of escalating violence, and that includes the United States. And that's why you have such a big push in this country today to disarm the people and get rid of the death penalty, because those are two of the very critical factors in moving the country from the period of from the preparatory phase to the period of escalating violence. Because one, you want to get rid of the death penalty, because when people start getting involved in terrorism, if they get caught, they probably will get executed, and if there's no death penalty, the worst thing that they can fear would be going to jail, and when the revolution goes to completion, they would have the hopes of becoming another Mandela or Castro or some commissar somewhere. Then you have the effort to try to disarm the people, because it takes very, very little effort. You have people armed with gas cans and crowbars and automatic weapons. It takes very few people to walk into your local community and liquidate the fear of the people, burn and sack what they want to, and essentially take over and destroy all your opposition, not all your potential opposition. See, the communist world never, are probably just as much concerned about potential opposition as they are opposition, for the simple reason when they take over, they do not want any remnants there that they cannot subdue and depend on their docility. And people who are educated, who have any fortitude at all, are always a threat to revolution, and consequently they must be liquidated, and generally are. And it's just done over a period of time. If you look at South Africa today, they move from the preparatory phase to the period of escalating violence a few years ago. And, from the period of escalating violence into the period of exploitation. And they are now assisting other revolutions around in Africa. And they are also, if you look at the casualty rate, the homicides in Africa compared to what it was during the period of escalating violence or in the preparatory phase, the casualty rate now, number of people being killed per year, is higher than it's ever been, and it keeps climbing. Why? Because they're in that period of exploitation, and they're liquidating and removing potential opposition, and they're still struggling, not struggling, they're still consolidating power. Even though they've taken power, they're still consolidating their position of power. And they are also doing everything they can in the, as an operative in the period of exploitation. As you remember, Bishop Tutu was very much involved in helping to lead South Africa into the new communist world. And it's rather interesting, a year and a half ago, he was here in Washington, D.C., and he was the number one speaker at the National Cathedral in Washington on Christmas Eve program. And Bishop Tutu, what was he doing? Just what they do in the period of exploitation. He was, in his sermon, he was talking about the great Christian values of from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. That's straight from Karl Marx, the great Christian value. So they're preaching the propaganda. Now, a lot of people don't realize it, but when you say to each according to his needs and from each according to their abilities, you really are subsuming that you have a totally dominant state that can tell you what you're going to give up and what you're going to get. And it's implicit in it, and most people listen to those words and they don't even realize that's what they're talking about. Now, the communist world, after they bring all the colonial and semi-colonial countries into the period of escalating violence or into the period of exploitation, and they're getting very close to that. Then they'll make a big final push with what they call simultaneous multiple wars of national liberation. And move from the preparatory phase into the period of escalating violence. And they're getting ready to do that. And China has been pushing the arms area very extensively, so has former Soviet Union, and many of the countries therein. I'm sure many have heard about the 2000 AK-47s that were to be distributed with two gangs out in California, and they were offered 800,000 AK-47s with the silencers to be fed into the revolutionary groupings here in the United States. So you're really talking now about big potential operations. The movement out in the Southwest, security on the border and the South America with South America is very, very tenuous now at this time. Many thousands, tens of thousands of people are coming across the border illegally. And it's not just people from Mexico. If you look at the people, statistics on the people coming in, you have people coming in 30, 40 different countries across that Mexican border. And you're getting more and more coming across the Canadian border as well. But now, you go from this period, what they call this moving into this period of exploitation, and hopefully they would have by the year 2000 most of the world converted into this period of exploitation. And that means that the countries have been taken over by the communist leadership or leftist leadership. And then they move to establish these global cartels for the production and distribution of goods and services. Now, many of these global cartels have been established and have been on the books for decades. Many of these multinational corporations were set up back 50 to 100 years ago to provide the seed basis for a global cartel. In other words, a global cartel in machine tools, a global cartel in surface transportation. Costco is approaching that now. If you look at the bottoms they have compared to what the rest of us have. A global cartel in timber growing, a global cartel in railroads, a global cartel for airplane traffic. So you globalize everything, including food production. And you set up a global system, which is now going to be World Trade Organization, the WTO, World Trade Organization. And by the way, the World Trade Organization has been on the books of the communist world for many, many years. Many, many years. So you have a World Trade Organization to orchestrate these global cartels, and with those you will establish what they call a World Socialist Division of Labor. In other words, you'll allocate the production around the world to various countries, what has to be done. I know when I was many, many years in the research and development business, and the Soviet Union had split up many in areas where different countries had the lead in various areas of technology.
General, we have to go to break. Can you hold that for a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay.
Listen to us worldwide on hbroadcast.com. This is the Heritage Broadcast System.
An exclusive process perfected by the James S. Kirk Company over 160 years ago make this natural, pure coconut oil soap perform like magic. It makes handfuls of rich, creamy lather in any kind of water. It removes stubborn dirt, yet it's gentle enough for tender, sensitive skin. It's hypoallergenic and biodegradable. It rinses in a flash, leaves no residue on your body, tub, or shower. It's ideal for hands, face, hair, and bath for the entire family. Cook's original Castile soap contains pure coconut oil, glycerin, fragrance, and water. Unlike most of the leading brands that use animal byproducts and preservatives, originally Castile means a vegetable-based soap found in Castile, Spain. Today, Castile refers to any vegetable-based soap instead of animal-based soap. You can be sure that all Kirk products contain no animal byproducts and are never tested on animals. No other soap even remotely compares in performance. Can you trust your skin to anything less than natural? Original bar soaps are $1 each. 16-ounce pump bottle soaps are $5 each, or call for quantity discounts. Kirk soaps are available from Cedar Fork Urban Minerals at 423-626-0440. That's 423-626-0440. Super 21 is an advanced fuel enhancer formulated for all types of engines. This revolutionary product significantly increases your engine's combustion process, resulting in more power and greater fuel efficiency while decreasing toxic emissions. Users commonly experience fuel economy increases up to 25% and increased power up to 20%. In addition, Super 21 can reduce the harmful emissions your car emits by as much as 98%. These benefits ultimately extend the life of your engine. Using advanced microemulsion technology, Super 21 is the only multi-purpose fuel system enhancer on the market capable of increasing engine performance, improving fuel economy, stripping engine deposits, and dramatically reducing toxic emissions. Super 21 is only $21.95. For more information, call Cedar Fork Urban Minerals at 423-626-0440. Ask about our associate and distributor programs. That's 423-626-0440.
Welcome back to By Yahweh Design with Pastor Dan. Now, here are your hosts.
back, everybody. And again, it is the 29th of May, year 2001. Our program tonight is the Third International, Part 2. Our guest is United States Air Force General Ben Parton, retired from Virginia. And before we continue here, General, let me give the call-in number. It's 812-476-3026. And again, that's 812-476-3026. And General, when you're ready for callers, you'll have to let me know. Also, I had a question while I'm thinking of it. In your first program we did last week on Wednesday, the 23rd, you had mentioned you'd written a book, but you never told us what the name of it was. So if you could, give me the name of the book. And also, if people want to get in touch with you to get information and or help in something, is there a way for them to contact you?
Sure, you can give them my name and address. Just put Ben Parton, 8908 Captain's Road, Alexandria, Virginia, 22308. My phone number is 703-780-7652. But I have a tape that covers much of this stuff in addition to, well, it covers all the bombing terrorist stuff we've had, Waco, Oklahoma, Bruce Ridge, the Trade Center, and the shoot down of TW-800. Well, by the way, I think that people should watch about 60 Minutes tonight. Some FBI guys and CIA guys have come forth and let the cat out of the bag on a lot of things in Oklahoma, so this is going to radically change the picture. I wonder where so many of these people have been who have a handle on a lot of information. I'm glad to see people are coming forth and letting some of this information get out.
Absolutely. What was the name of the book you wrote?
I did an operations research report, and it was dealing with the Sino-Soviet split. And it was entitled "The Sino-Soviet Conflict, Competition, and Cooperation: The Risk in Force Structure Planning." And you can see if the United States regarded Russia and China as enemies of each other, when in fact they were cooperating together, and as they have been for our destruction all along, there's never been a discontinuity in the program at Third International. And with the biggest disinformation program promoting the Communist World Progress from around 1955 to around 1986-87, the biggest number one disinformation program in the world was the Sino-Soviet split. In other words, China and Russia were an enemy toward one another. And since around 1990-1991, the number one disinformation program in the world today is Communism is Dead. And nothing is dead about communism. They're still marching forth, doing precisely what they were doing before. They have not changed a thing. We are victimized by propaganda and the subversion of the media, and not only this country, but the rest of the world. So the number one disinformation program since around 1991 has been Communism is Dead. It's a disinformation program. Now, going back to the program, they were establishing global cartels for everything. They would establish a world socialist division of labor by World Trade Organization, and we're getting that now. It's not totally global, but we're getting close to it. And then you would globalize everything. You'd have a global educational program. You're going to develop this Soviet man. You would have a global judicial system. We now have a global judicial system. And global educational standards and global educational system. Global military. Get rid of all the arms everywhere except for the United Nations, or this global military will be controlled by the global hierarchy. And you move on from that to the so-called withering away of the state. And you establish then this global hierarchy of regional governments. A global hierarchy of regional governments. And this country is setting your prime and cock to go to a regional government system. All you need is a national emergency that can be precipitated by Soviet Union or China or most many countries can precipitate that anytime they want to. And the president can declare a national emergency and you go to a rule by presidential decree. And all those regulations, the presidential directives have been on the books since beginning back in Nixon's time or earlier. So the country, the world is trying to copy, the United States is trying to go to this system of regional governments. Now, with a global hierarchy of regional governments, you have what the communist world calls a world without nations, a world without nationalities, a world without boundaries, a world without freedom. And it's also a world without competition. They want to eliminate competition everywhere. They want this total global hierarchical system. Now, the program of Third International, we go into almost every area of endeavor. I've talked about, primarily about the transforming processes or transforming power, all along. And, but they spell out specifically what you do in industry, in transportation, in communications, in agriculture, trade and credit, labor, social legislation, housing, economic policy, which is this global system, the World Socialist Division of Labor, and how you rule, and who you liquidate, and all the things that you have to do to transform and come up with this socialist man. That's their end game, this new socialist man. The new world order with a new socialist man. So all those things are spelled out in the program. I spent most of my time talking about the transformation of power because to me that's been the primary thing I've been concerned with because of my military background as well as my efforts in developing new weapons and the weapon systems to look forward to days in the future as to what kind of competition we'd have military. So I tell you, we're getting down to the last 23 or 4 minutes, so we ought to answer some questions if anybody's got any out there.
Okay, well, we'll open up the phone lines, and while we're waiting for somebody to call in, again, the phone number, folks, is 812-476-3026. While we're waiting for that, I'll ask a question that came to my mind. What do we do about it? And number two, how can this be going on with so many people in the military and in the government who should know about these sort of things and yet aren't doing anything to alert us about it? How can that happen?
Well, you know, Ashcroft, the new Attorney General, made a statement just a few days ago and said he was not going to delay past the new assigned date for the execution of McVeigh. And now here today he has, we've got a bunch of people, some people from the FBI and CIA who've come out and breaking things which the FBI has been doing very, very illegal things and not giving information to the, not preparing reports on things that they were investigating and not giving them to the defense. Or, for that matter, a lot of them cases they weren't even giving them to the prosecutors. So there's been a massive cover-up. What's rather interesting is the document that Mr. Ashcroft was speaking from was a report prepared by one of the guys who was alleged to be one of the key guys in the cover-up. So Mr. Ashcroft is sitting there as the only new appointed guy in the Department of Justice, and he's got all these people out there in the Department of Justice. They haven't changed the administration. He's only one out of, gosh, of thousands of people that you have in the Department of Justice. So he's being blindsided, and the left-wingers in the Senate and the House are, and particularly in the Senate, are not letting the new administration staff itself with the people who they have some confidence in. And I think many people in this country realize the past administration was run by, to a certain extent, a bunch of gangsters.
Mm-hmm. Well, here again, many of the people I'm sure listening are going to wonder, you know, what do we do about this? I mean,
well,
I know a lot of people for years, my eyes were opened clear back up in the mid 70s, early 80s by people I knew who were feeding me information and books, etc. Some people are just now beginning to realize that we're in deep trouble. So one of the first questions is, what do we do? What do we, the average Joe out here that works for a living, what does he do about this?
Well, I got a letter from a guy today who spent his whole life and whole career in the OSI. And it was only in his involvement in a major national investigation that opened his eyes to what was going on. And he was so shocked. He had been working and trying to do precisely what you're talking about. What can we do to turn things around? Let me say this. As soon as I retired from the military, I got very involved in politics because we have the tools in this country to turn this country around. We can have a bloodless revolution every 2 years because we can throw everybody in the House of Representatives out and replace them with good people. And nothing can be done in this country if not doesn't have the money appropriated by the House of Representatives. Nothing. So we have to take back this country politically. And I think you find many pastors and people, I know I've had a lot of trouble when I got involved in politics myself after I retired from the Air Force. People say, well, stay out of politics, it's dirty. Even my own family, my own sister gave me a very hard time about sticking our nose in politics. It's a very, very dirty business. And so why do you stick your nose in it? But, you know, I ran for the House of Delegates in the state of Virginia, didn't win, turned right around and ran for a chairman of the Fairfax County Republican Committee, which is the biggest political unit in the state of Virginia by a wide margin. I've been told it's the biggest political unit in the whole country. It's over two congressional districts. And we organized, and we organized, and we organized. And I know Senator Robb called us the Northern Virginia, the term he used. He used some comment that sort of tied us together as a power block up here in Northern Virginia. I think we did have a fairly significant power block in Northern Virginia. We could deliver about 20%. Northern Virginia delivers about 20% of the vote. And it's easier to get Senator Warner and Senator Tribble and three or four congressmen on the phone than it was the pastor of my church. And in the political process, if you abandon the political process and you're doing nothing about it, you're not in the nominating process for people who are going to run. Over half the people, even in a presidential election, don't even vote. And for electing your state representatives and congressmen, and I dare say you have a primary, most states won't even have 25% of the people will vote in a primary for the senator or congressman. And that's just non-participation. So if you have that kind of a situation, you can have a very small militant minority group out there who can totally dominate the political scene. I just think one of the largest influential groups in this country, if they were organized, would be, you know, the Christian community out there. Mm-hmm. And as it stands, the whole Christian community out there has not a fraction of the political lobbying power and organizational power that the homosexual community has. And now you got the gambling and drug power out there in this country is very, very large, lots of money. And the nice guy, John Q. Public, is just not involved. He's just disengaged. When the leadership and the good guys in this country need to get out there and take back the political process. And individuals, and it starts at the precinct. And a precinct, I know in Fairfax County where I live, a precinct is about 1,000 homes and 2,500 to 3,000 voters. And precincts make up districts for supervisors in the county, your local officers, or your state officers, your national officers. And the precinct is the organization that gets out the vote, organizes, trains people, gets people educated, and turns out the vote for the local people, the state people, the national people. And that's where it begins. And once you learn precinct operations, there's nothing you can't do at the national, state, local level. You learn it all right there in the precinct. And people need to get stick their nose in the precinct operations and take the country back at the precinct level. And that goes for both parties and all the fragmentary parties. All these people go out there and say, hey, let's go out and start a new political party. They just don't realize it is infinitely easier for the good people to get involved in the political process and turn any party into more of a virtuous organization. where they're looking after the long-term interests of this country. I think most people in this country, the majority, genuinely want this country to succeed. But they have a lot of divisive interests out there that are diversionary interests to a certain extent, but by and large, the majority of the people want this country to succeed. And you have a minority of the people out there who are organized and control the political process and are running rampant over the majority of the people who are just generally not involved. And if we're going to turn it around, it has to be done politically. It has to be done at the precinct level. And the good people need to get out there and organize. And it's not leaving things up to the lowest common denominator. And I know when I was running training sessions for precinct chairman, and I was in my assistants, you have the most influential and highly respected and most honored, the guy with the most integrity in that precinct to be the precinct chairman. And he doesn't need to do all the work, and he should have about 25 or 30 or 40 block captains to work with him. So in the precinct, you have a precinct chairman and maybe 30 or 40, well, one block captain for every 25 homes. And you got an organizational structure right down to the individual family, individual home. And you can deliver a precinct. I know in local precincts around here, you can, with 25, 30 block captains, you can deliver a flyer to every home, every one of 1,000 homes, and it'll cost you probably $20. Because somebody can go out and deliver 20 flyers, and you can carry on a continuing education program. You have to get around the corrupt media. The media in this country is totally corrupt. It is corrupt. It is corrupt. And it is totally dominated, and they don't want the truth out. And were it not for talk shows and a lot of good newsletters out there that are being turned out, people in this country would be very dumb, very uninformed. It was tremendous. It was a tremendous encouragement to me. WorldNetData.com had a fairly large survey about 2 weeks ago. And they found that 45%, roughly 45% of the people in this country now believe that there was a cover-up in Waco and in Oklahoma, compared to 55% who did not believe it. Now, I think when you look at the effort to cover this thing up by the government and by the media out there, that is a phenomenal progress. Phenomenal progress. So with the internet and newsletters and political organizations out there to get out the information, the American people can get informed. You just have to bypass the dominant media outlets of the TV out there and the newspapers. There are a few newspapers out there that are good, but there are very few of them. The mainline newspapers are not. And the advertisers can control the mainline newspapers so that they don't really get the truth out. They're not going to get the truth out. In fact, they habitually get out the lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel sorry for Ashcroft, because he's the head of the Department of Justice today, and he's reading off of a sheet prepared by a guy who, from my information, was very much involved in the cover-up. So we've got to get some honesty and integrity in the political process. And you're not going to do it unless you run good people for office and get the good people out there organized and participating in the political process. And you got to get good people involved in it. Too many people leave up the political process work, a block captain or a precinct chairman, to the lowest common denominator out there. You know, somebody who's unemployed or some poor housewife trying to take care of 3 or 4 kids and do the job as a precinct chairman, and so many other people out there who have more time and energy. Now, to be a block captain really doesn't require much more than being a good neighbor. And there's nobody out there who can't be a block captain in a political organization. And I know the whole time I was a Fairfax County chairman, I served 2 terms. And I always was a block captain in my particular street, because everybody knew me, I knew everybody else, and I worked to influence the people, and I wasn't concerned whether somebody on my street was a Democrat or Republican. I was really concerned about those people getting information and being informed. And then when they went to the polls, they could make a judicious evaluation of the candidates and get the information out on the candidates. So the system is there for us to take this country back. And it doesn't take long to do it if we just got enough people who are willing to go out there and take back the political process. And when you do that, you find the number of bad guys out there who want to destroy this country and subvert this country and undermine this country are a minority. And the good people can dominate the political system if they'll get out there and do it. It's not that difficult.
Okay, General, we have a caller. We have Glenn from New Mexico. Welcome to the program, Glenn.
Hello. General Pardon.
Yes, sir. How are things down in that land?
Well, we're fine. General Pardon, I've been listening to you for this 45 minutes. I didn't hear your first talk. But I come to the conclusion that you are both absolutely right in many respects, and so absolutely wrong in many other respects. You have missed the fundamental forces that are guiding the direction of Western civilization. And all I want to say is that what you have to do is to every day listen to Pastor Dan's show here. It's on the internet or on satellite or various other sources. Every day listen to it, and you will eventually find out the ultimate truth. And I'm speaking as atheist now, but Pastor Dan is right in so many respects as far as the fundamental nature of those forces that, as I said, are directing Western civilization. The other thing you might do is...
I don't think you and I would probably disagree on those forces. I just haven't talked about some of the things you want me to talk about.
I apologize if that's the case.
Pardon me?
I apologize if that's the case.
Well, I think that is the case.
Okay. I hope we're together.
Hey, if that were not the case, I'd be out in my garden today.
Okay, I hope we're together. And I'll let you identify what those forces are. And so far you have not mentioned them. You've not mentioned them explicitly. And unless you understand what this minority is, we're gonna lose. We have lost over the past couple hundred years. And that's about all I want to say. Oh, the other thing is get a copy of the resistor if you don't have one already.
Get what?
Get a copy of the resistor. Dan will give you the address.
Oh, I get it. I know very well.
Okay, very good. Maybe you are on the right track.
I know very well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Glenn. that's pretty good. Yeah, we haven't come out and mentioned a certain group by name, but as one person pointed out to me here recently, some of the fun is letting people find that out for themselves. Just give them enough information, they'll figure it out.
Well, the thing is, if you take back this country, you've got to use the majority of the people that you have out there, and don't let this system keep being run by little minorities, little dissident groups here and dissident groups there. The majority of the people in this country, as I said before, want this country to succeed. And we have to get that majority of people committed, involved, so that these little minorities out there are not governing things and controlling things.
Right. Hey, I got a question for you, since nobody else has called in yet. Have you heard of General Raymond Davis, the retired Marine Corps general, and his organization called American Veterans in Domestic Defense?
Yep.
So you are aware of that?
Very much aware of that group.
Okay. I'm trying to get a hold of them to get either the general or one of his staff to come on the air and explain what they're doing. I saw their ad in the Jubilee this past edition. Very excellent full-page ad, and it looks like they're on the right track, at least from what the ad says.
We have Stan from California. He says he's got 20 seconds worth of comments.
Okay, General, we have Stan from California. Welcome to the program, Stan.
Yes, welcome, gentlemen. I just wanted to make one comment, which is General Parton is going to be at the Barnes Review Conference in Washington, D.C., the 15th, 16th, and 17th. And I don't have a number for the Barnes Review, but maybe General Parton has that number so people know that they can meet General Parton and other patriots on that weekend.
I don't have the number in front of me for that organization, for the Barnes & Noble, but I'm sure if they call Spotlight, they'll give it to them.
That's true.
Let's see. I've got the Barnes Review in front of me. I've got one number. It's 877 area code 773-9077.
Okay.
And there's going to be a great lineup there, including General Parton, and I hope as many people as possible can attend.
That's in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Okay.
You can either call the that number I just gave you. That's the toll-free number for Barnes Review, or you can call the Spotlight newspaper in Washington, D.C., and that's in the phone book, area code 202.
Okay. Excellent. Barnes Review, a good publication. Very
exactly.
Good
publication. Well, look, I'm going to get off the phone so you guys can talk some more. Thanks a lot for the show.
All right, Stan, thanks a lot, and Yahweh bless you, buddy. We're down to about a minute, General, if you'd like to say some closing remarks.
Well, I think my closing comments would be that I think this country has an economic system that is very viable. I think we have the opportunity and we have the means in this country to turn it around. It's got to be done by the people, and the people have to get out there and take the political process back and quit playing truancy with respect to the political process. There are just too few people out there who are involved, and the good guys are letting the bad guys run away with the show. And there's no reason why we should ever go by a two-year period that every congressman out there who is not really voting right isn't thrown out every 2 years. Just because somebody's got tenure doesn't mean a thing. Get rid of them if they're not voting to support the long-term interests of this country.
I agree.
So
I think people have to turn on to the political process
and get involved.
Well,
I've not done it here in Northern Virginia and seen what can be done. I would not be near as enthusiastic about doing that as I am.
Okay. Thanks for being our guest, General. We're out of time, and Yahweh bless you, and thanks for being on.
My pleasure.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening in. Tune in tomorrow night at 7 as we'll have Mr. Mark Weber with the Institute for Historical Review as our guest. It'll be a good one also. Take care. Yahweh bless. Keep your powder dry.
This is the Heritage Broadcast System.